Welcome to Readsy Live, the podcast. I'm your host, Martin Kavanagh. In this show, I speak with professionals from the world of publishing to show you how to write and publish better books. Today I'm sharing a talk I had with novelist S.J. Watson all about the rewriting process. In particular, how to unleash one's inner editor and kill your darlings. Steve has written several books, most notably the international bestseller Before I Go to Sleep, which has been published in over 40 languages and adapted into a film starring Nicole Kidman and Colin Firth. This was recorded in January of 2024 and live-streamed on Readsy's YouTube channel. So let's drop in with S.J. Watson and find out how a celebrated thriller writer might go about killing his darlings.
For me and most of my writer friends, books are made in the edit. That can vary to an extent. I mean, some people will write their first draft very quickly and then they will end up with a fairly rough first draft. And that's what I do. And it's what I would tend to recommend to people who are not quite sure which way to go. There are people out there who write their first draft very slowly, essentially editing as they go. Just as a kind of illustration, I think, before we dive into this, of how important I think editing is. Before I Go to Sleep, my first book, I kind of have tried to work this out, and this is all very rough, but I think if you were to consider the first draft of Before I Go to Sleep and compare it to the finished final book that you can, you know, order online or buy off the shelf, I think probably only 40% roughly of the first draft is unchanged. And by unchanged, I mean, you know, I've probably moved sentences around. I've obviously corrected typos and chosen better words, but essentially the material is more or less the same for about 40% of the book. And that leaves for the remainder, I think 30% of it was substantially changed. So I think at least, you know, around a third of the book, of the first draft, I completely rewrote. So, you know, the scene may be the same, but I've changed the setting perhaps, or I changed the feel of it, or you know, substantially rewritten. And if my maths is correct, that leaves 30% of the book, sorry, 30% of the finished book wasn't in the first draft. So it's brand new material. So, you know, 60% of that book essentially was created or recreated in the editing stage. So I think hopefully that gives you an idea of how important the edit is. I think it's important to notice as well before we start that an agent or an editor will eventually be present to help you. You know, if you're fortunate enough to get to the point where your book is with an editor or your book is with an agent, they will generally help you to do the edit. But of course, our task at this stage is to get the book to the point it's good enough to be considered for publication or to be considered by an agent. So that's kind of essentially what we're talking about now, the edit that we do before we really show it to anybody within the publishing industry or send it to be, you know, self-published if that's the route we've chosen. I kind of chose the title Unleash the Inner Editor because I think it's quite useful. I find it quite useful to think of your inner editor as the kind of gladiator. This is the person, this is the part of you, of your creative self that's going to come in and really fix things. And that can feel quite exhilarating. I find editing quite an exhilarating part of the book writing process. It can be quite scary because for reasons that are probably fairly obvious, but we'll come on to talk about, which is, you know, you've essentially got to go in and really, really move things around. And I think there's always a sense of fear that you might be, you know, trying to fix something that isn't broken and making things worse. So it's quite exhilarating, quite scary. And so, but the inner editor is your kind of gladiator fighting your corner. And that's how it's a good way of thinking about it. So the stage one of the edit, I think, a hugely important part of the process, weirdly, is the easiest because I think it's essential to leave the book alone after you've written your first draft and you've typed, you know, the end, to leave it alone for as long as you can. Jane Austen famously used to lock her first draft, her manuscript, in a bottom drawer and give the key to a friend, and with the instructions not to release the key for a year. So Austen used to leave her first draft alone and untouched for a whole year. I think that's a bit of a tall order. I've never managed to do that, especially with deadlines and things like that. But I think it's a good idea to leave it for as long as you can, as long as you feel comfortable. With Before I Go to Sleep, for example, I finished that draft in early August of 2009, I think it must have been. And I managed to leave it until kind of late October before I started editing it. So that's, I don't know, what's that work out at? There's the whole of September and much of August and October. So nearly 3 months. And I think that's probably quite a good length of time. The reason I recommend you do that is because when you go back into the editing process, you need to be approaching it as a reader would and try and divorce yourself from the emotion of the writing. And that's because you're going to probably end up making some quite big changes to the book. And so it's very dangerous, I think, if you can remember and identify with the person you were as you wrote it. So, for example, if there's a scene that's not quite working, but you're tempted to leave it in because, you know, you remember it was a great writing day and, you know, the birds were tweeting in the sky and everything was going really well and you were happy and it flowed effortlessly, you might find that very difficult then to go, but it doesn't fit the book, so it needs to come out, which is a skill that you have to develop or something that you have to feel able to do. So I would recommend leaving it as long as you can so that you can then go back to it as a reader rather than a writer. Go back to it as somebody prepared to do what needs doing to fix it. So say you leave it for 3 months. I think the next stage is to, I would recommend reading your manuscript and ideally in as few sittings as possible. If you can read it in one sitting, that's fine, that's great, that's really good. But, you know, that's not always possible if you've got a 90,000 word manuscript or whatever. So, but read it in as few sittings as you can. And I would recommend at this point taking yourself away somewhere. You know, if you have the luxury of being able to take it on holiday or to book a bed and breakfast or an apartment somewhere and you know, get out of town physically to a new space, that's great. Not everyone can do that, of course. But even if you just end up taking it to a coffee shop, just somewhere you didn't write it, because I think that can really help to, again, to create this sense that it's not a book that you've written, if that makes, that's almost what we're trying to achieve, is this feeling that it's something that's nothing to do with us, which of course is impossible, but we need to try and get as close to it as we can. I would also recommend in this initial read through, what you're basically trying to do is getting a feel for the shape of the book. You know, how is it working? Have you written the book that you thought you had? You know, do any parts drag? Are any parts not making sense? Is anything feeling rushed? And obviously, you know, looking out for any obvious errors. I would really recommend that you try not to make notes at this stage. Now, I'm sort of hesitant saying that because I never manage. I always start this process with my red pen nowhere near me, thinking I'll just, you know, just read it and not make any notes. But I end up making notes. It's something that's kind of inevitable. But I think if you can, not distract yourself, I suppose, by making physical notes. Try to, because this is really just a kind of look at the overall picture that you've created, the overall book. And then in kind of preparation, it's like standing back from the painting, I suppose, and seeing whether it is what we thought it was. So you're not kind of at this stage going to dive in and do anything. And I think it's worth saying as well, there are two things that you might get. You might read sections and think, what on earth was I thinking when I wrote that? Because, you know, if you're anything like me anyway, I have good days and I have bad days. Some days the writing is going really well and it feels like the prose is effortless and beautiful, if I, you know, can drop my self-deprecation for a while. But other days, you know, I can look back and go, what on earth was that? That was, you know, this is dreadful. I think this is quite good and this is dreadful are both things to be wary of, because if we, at this stage anyway, if we get too attached to the words on the page, it can make it more difficult to change those words if we need to, or to remove those words if those words need to be removed. So just be wary of anything that feels really good and anything that feels really bad. You can always fix bad. You can fix bad prose. And so in some ways, it's more dangerous if we read it through and go, gosh, I'm a genius. You know, that which rarely happens, but that can be more of a problem. So once we've done that, once we've done a read through, I also think at this stage, it's probably helpful to try and not read on the screen. I find it helpful to print out a manuscript or to create it as a PDF anyway, maybe read it on an iPad or similar device. With my first book, I actually used a company called Lulu.com. I don't know if they still exist because I have not used them since. And that was over 10 years ago, but I got them to print. They would do runs of one copy of a book. So essentially I got a bound draft. So it looked and felt like a book. And that was really helpful, again, to kind of convince you, to trick yourself into thinking it's not something that you created. But once you've done that read through on whatever format, or, you know, in whatever, whether it's hard copy or on the screen, it's time to get the red pen out. And again, I would do this on a page as well. So not on, if you wrote it in Word, I would print it out. I wouldn't edit it at this stage on the screen. We started to get a feel for the changes that we need to make, and now we're going to start making them. So I would read through it again, more slowly this time, less emphasis on getting through it in as few sittings as possible, and just make more notes. I think initially we start, this is probably fairly obvious, but it bears saying, initially start with the big picture. So start with, does it make sense? Are the scenes in the right order? Does anything feel like it's out of place or doesn't quite fit with the rest of the book? So we're looking really at the kind of structure of the book. Does it hold up? You know, the beginning, the middle, and the end. Are any of those sections too short or too long? Does anything seem to come out of nowhere and therefore needs foreshadowing or whatever? So at this point, we really are looking at the big picture. There's no point, I think, at this stage in worrying too much about things like typos, too much about things like adverbs and adjectives, and if our writing is clumsy, if we've chosen a sentence needs rewording or a paragraph needs shifting around. At this point, I don't think we're at that stage where we should be looking at those kind of details. We're really looking at, does this scene belong here? Is this scene, does it belong in the book? Should it be later in the book? Should it be earlier in the book? You know, should it be in the book at all? I would make notes at this point on the big changes, the biggish changes that we need to make. And then what I then do is make those changes. So try and get the book so that it's structurally working. I find it really helpful at this point to have two windows open on my screen. I use an app called Scrivener, which probably many of you have heard of and many of you use. Not everybody. I find it incredibly helpful, but you can equally have two Word documents open or whatever, you know, software you use. And then kind of the old draft, you can maybe change the font, or I change the ink color on the screen. So I have it in blue or red or green, or it doesn't really matter, just to show that this is the older draft and I'm now creating a new draft. And I just make those changes. Obviously, it takes a long time the first time. You're going through, you're making a pass at the book. Move the scenes around, move the chapters around. At this point, I will often create placeholders. So if I'm aware that a new scene needs to happen, you know, if something needs to happen between scene 6 and scene 7, I might create 6A and then literally just write in note form what needs to happen in that scene. So I won't necessarily write it at that point. If I'm feeling inspired, I might, particularly if it's a short-ish scene. But I'll try and get the book so it's working structurally without having necessarily gone in and changed any of the words or any of the, you know, the finer detail. And then it's a case of going over it again and again and again. So making several passes at the book. Probably fairly obviously, as we've started off at the structural level, as we go with each pass, we're getting to the more nitty-gritty, the fine tuning. So we start looking at chapters then. Does this chapter work? Then it's, does this scene within the chapter work? And then it could be this scene nicely written. Are there any changes I want to make to the actual words I've used? So it's a while before we get down to the scene, through the scene level, through the chapter level, and onto the sentence level. But I think it is, although it's kind of tempting to do that as we go, it's a good idea to stop that process and save it until a later pass. Because as I've sort of said already, if we end up spending a lot of time changing our sentences in a scene that we end up taking out anyway, that's time that we've wasted. How many passes does it take? I think the only answer to that, unfortunately, is as many as it needs. It's a bit difficult sometimes. I find it a bit difficult to work out, to sort of name something as either a new draft or is it just an edited version of the existing draft. It's fairly arbitrary. What I do is I number the draft, you know, 1.0, and then when I just make slight changes, that becomes 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. But if I make significant changes so it feels like it's a new iteration of the book, if you like, I then would name that draft 2. And just as an indication, the book I've nearly finished, I'm working on at the moment, I've nearly finished, I'm now on draft 4.1. So I've done 4, you know, substantial changes to it, and I'm now kind of doing an edit of draft 4, essentially. It's also worth at this point, I think, mentioning the opening. We can get very bogged down with the first page, the first chapter, the first line, first sentence. And obviously those things are very important, but just be wary of doing that stuff too early. You can do that quite near the end, you know, go back to your opening page and getting it right. For example, with Before I Go to Sleep originally didn't start where it starts currently. The original draft of that had a scene set the day before, I think it was. So if I'd spent, you know, hours or even days on that scene trying to get the opening to be, you know, brilliant, it would have been wasted because that scene ended up coming out. But when you do come to that stage, just remember the first line has to make you want to read the second. That's what it's there for. And the second line has to make you want to read the third and so on. And then the first paragraph has to make you want to read the next paragraph. The first page has to want to make you read the next page. So just be wary, just be aware when you're working on your opening of the book that you're far better off confusing the reader, I think, on the first page than you are boring them. So you want to give them a sense of character, a sense of place, and something surprising or unusual, but you don't have to explain everything. I think if you spend a long time on your opening page explaining who everybody is and what's going on, it can leave the writing feeling dead and boring. You're better off explaining less, because that's going to want to make the reader read on to find out, you know, why is this person in the supermarket with no clothes on, or whatever it might be. I don't know why my brain always reaches for nudity when I'm giving an example of something that might be captivating. Maybe that's just a lot about me. Tips and pitfalls when you're doing your edit, when you're going through these successive passes of your book. It can really help, I think, to read your work aloud. And I found that to my peril once when I was asked to read luckily it was just a short story I'd written. When I edited it, at no point had I read it aloud, even though I was writing it with the intention of reading it out aloud at an event I was doing. The day of the event, when I came to practice, you know, just to make sure, I read the work out loud for the first time and realized it just didn't, there were so many sentences which were incredibly clumsy in terms of word order. So it can really highlight, in a way that surprised me, it can really highlight clumsily worded sentences or clumsily written paragraphs by reading the work out loud. And that can be incredibly helpful. And it's perfectly possible to read an entire 90,000 word book out loud. Be aware as you're editing of your stylistic tics and habits, because we all have them. Mine, for example, my characters turn an awful lot of the time. They turn to each other. They turn away from each other. They turn towards doors. They turn towards desks. They turn towards computers or TVs or whatever. It's okay in the first draft. You know, just you're trying to get the words on the page. You're trying to get the story told. But at this point, this is when you start to notice how many times people are turning to each other, or shrugging is another one of mine, or nodding, and start to take those out or to mix them up a little bit at least. I also have them reaching for cutlery quite a lot. One of my editorial notes in one of my books, can't remember which one, somebody pointed out that I had characters picking up cutlery so many times, but never putting them down. So they were continually picking up the knives and forks. But anyway, so just be aware of those crutches, I suppose, that we tend to reach for when we're writing. Weirdly, I'm going to advise you, don't worry too much about typos. When you get to the point that a book is being edited professionally, whether it's by someone you've paid to do so or someone at a publishing house, they'll sort out your typos. I mean, obviously, it's important not to, to try and fix things as much as you can. But don't get too obsessed or bogged down in typos or repeated words. There are all, and every single time I submit a book to my publisher, that at some point I will notice that I've spelt things wrong, or that I've left a typo in, or I've, you know, repeated words on the page. So that will all come out later. So don't worry too much about that. But it is helpful to just look, have a run, a read through, looking for things like adverbs and adjectives, and see if you can just find better ways of, you know, there's usually a more exciting verb to use. Most adverbs can come out, you know, so walk slowly, for example, the person can creep, or they can slink, or they can shuffle. There's usually a more exciting verb to use, especially with an adverb. Again, Scrivener, I'm not sort of trying to sell Scrivener to anybody, but Scrivener has a feature called linguistic focus, so you can ask it to highlight adjectives, adverbs, nouns, verbs, so on. That can be really helpful. It's worth having a read through as well, looking out for your cliches. You know, hearts that boom or pound or break. It's almost impossible to have a heart doing anything, to be honest, that without it being a cliche. Things that are cold as ice, teeth that are on edge, shivers down the spine. Try and take all these out if you can. Swap them for something better, something more original, something that's going to make the reader sit up and take notice. Possibly more, in many ways, more importantly, I think, just keep an eye open for coincidences. I think the two C's, cliche and coincidence, are things you've really got to look out for in your book. You can't really get away with coincidences too much in novels, especially these days. So, for example, with that, in Before I Go to Sleep, in the first draft, my main character, Christine, I knew that she had to meet another character called Claire. They hadn't met up to this point. Originally, in the first draft, they bumped into each other in the shop. And I just thought this, you know, luckily in my set, when I came to edit that book, I realized that was unbelievable because, you know, they've been in this situation for 10 plus, I can't remember exactly, but 10 plus years. Why is it only now when I need it for the purposes of my plot that they're bumping into each other? So, you know, that again, that's kind of all right in the first draft. But by the time you're coming to polish your work, you should really be looking for more satisfying or believable ways that these things can happen. Just be aware as well that you're not going to be standing at your reader's shoulder as they're reading the book. So every time if you come across anything that kind of you feel makes sense but needs explanation, the only explanation that the reader has is what's on the page. The text has to explain it. Some ambiguity is obviously okay. You don't want to tie everything up in a neat bow, but just be aware of anything that you would, you know, imagine if you're in a writing group, if you need to explain this to your colleagues, then it needs to change because you won't be there to explain it to your readers. Another thing that's worth really looking out for, is a lot of people, especially when you're first writing, tend to say things three times. You tend to announce what you're about to say, and then you say it, and then you remind the reader that you've said it. So just be cautious of that. The reader will get it. Just say it the once. It's fine. So that's another kind of habit that lots of people have that just be aware of. For a few minutes now, let's just talk about specifically how do we kill our darlings, which I think is one of the most tricky things when we're trying to edit. Because as I've sort of said already, we can have passages or chapters or even characters or scenes that we fall in love with and we don't want to take out of the book. We've come up with a lovely metaphor, a lovely image or some particularly poetic turn of phrase, and we want to leave that in the book. This is really the point, I think, of the long wait, the 3 months or whatever that we've given ourselves before we started this editing process. Because we have to look at it coldly and pretend that we didn't write this book. I mean, that's obviously impossible to do. You can only read any book for the first time once, and especially one that you've written. You know, you know the ins and outs of it. You know the twists, if there are twists. You know the truth, if there's a truth at the heart of the novel. But this is the point at which you have to just be ruthless. Remembering that you are, when you're killing your darlings, you are sacrificing the minor part of the book for the project as a whole. And I think it's worth remembering that nobody is out there is going to be interested in a book that might have flashes of brilliance. It might have, you know, a lovely turn of phrase every few pages or a lovely metaphor. It might be, you know, have the odd flash of brilliant writing. If the whole thing doesn't work, if the book as a whole isn't working, no one's going to publish it. No one is going to read it. No one is going to buy it. No one is going to review it. The book itself has to come first. So if you've written a wonderful character that you've fallen for, but you realize they don't belong in the book, take them out. If you've written a wonderful chapter, take it out if it doesn't work. As I said, as kind of implied before I go to sleep, there's a lot of that book that's ended in my trash file. You know, 60% or something. It was stuff that I wrote and then took out. So do you have to be ruthless? The book does come first. So, you know, cut something out. When you're reading, do you find yourself impatient to get on with the story? Take that out or shorten it. Often I find, this is a really helpful piece of advice too. Often I find if there's something I don't want to take out, I'm trying to change and make better. Sometimes you can. Sometimes that's what it needs. It doesn't need taking out. It needs improving. But often if I'm struggling to improve something, if I'm struggling to get it right, if it doesn't seem to be working, usually in my experience, that's because it needs to come out. So I delete it. And often, almost every time, in fact, I will find that by deleting a problematic passage or section or paragraph, it seems to free up the whole thing. And I may then go back in and write something completely different. But that passage that I was trying to improve was actually a block, was actually a sticking point. So just be prepared to take stuff out if you don't feel it's working. I think it's a good idea not to delete that stuff completely. So again, Scrivener has a trash which doesn't self-empty. So keep a file or a trash can that doesn't self-empty so that stuff will remain. I have to say, though, in my experience, I find this a psychological thing as much as anything. It's very rare that I've gone. In fact, I don't think I can think of a single example of when I've actually gone back into my trash and retrieved something that I thought I deleted to use somewhere else. Because usually by deleting something, it improves the book, and then the book goes off in a sort of different direction, or the stuff that you've taken out with good reason. But I think it's important to have that psychological crutch of knowing that, you know, you may have spent days, even longer on a scene just to delete it. You haven't deleted it. You've put it in your discard file, and so it's still there. It still exists. I also think it's really helpful and important to remind yourself that I truly believe that no work that you do, no writing that you do is ever wasted. Even if it comes out of the book, it's still flexing the muscle. It's still developing your writing skills. It's still teaching you what the book doesn't need, perhaps. You know, it's still you getting to know your characters. So none of the writing that you do on any stage of it, I don't think, is wasted. Unless you end up ruining the book by being too reluctant to take anything out. So, you know, every word, every sentence, every character, every scene, every chapter has to earn its place. And you have to really be prepared to examine that quite closely just to make sure that everything that's in there deserves to be in there and take out anything that doesn't. So for an example there with Before I Go to Sleep, that I remember there was, I don't remember how long it was, but there was a fairly long scene that involved a brand new character where I actually quite liked. In that book, originally in the first draft of that book, I think that scene and that character probably remained into the second and even third draft. But at some point, I read it and I just thought, this is slowing it down. This scene, love it though I do, is just slowing the book down. And it came out and was replaced by a phone call that took place that I took a paragraph to write. Did it hurt removing it? A little bit, yeah. Am I glad I did? Also, very much so. Yeah, the book was better for that scene not being in it and that character not being in it. How do we know when it's done? I've said, you know, we do as many passes as a book needs, but how many is that? How do we know when it's done? It can be tempting to continually tinker. I think you can always kind of improve things, but the further you get into an edit, the smaller the differences you're making. It's kind of an inverse exponential, I think it is, the changes that you're making. I think I was given some good advice once, which is, you know, a book's done when it doesn't rattle. And by that, I think my understanding of that anyway is I think you always have a feeling for a section that doesn't work. You're always thinking, oh yeah, I think the book is more or less there, but I'm sort of pretty sure that chapter 3 isn't quite there yet. So, you know, although you might be reluctant to admit it to yourself, I think you can always tell deep down, you always know if there's a bit that needs a bit more that isn't quite working yet. So you do, I think, tend to know. And if none of it rattles, if you find yourself tinkering around the edges and not making any substantial changes, it's probably done. And at that point, I would recommend to try and show the book to someone, let someone read it. I mean, somebody that you trust, obviously, someone who's a reader, but more importantly than those things almost, I think, someone who isn't afraid of hurting your feelings. If you have a kind of a partner or a loved one who can be brutally honest with you and risk that, then go for it. But usually it's somebody who's a little bit more distant, who is respectful, obviously, and doesn't want to hurt your feelings, you know, is respectful of your feelings, but is prepared to say, yeah, I didn't really like chapter 3, or I didn't really like this character, or I didn't really get why X happened and then Z, you know. So try and show it to somebody if you can, if it's got someone that you can trust. And for that, I think writing groups can be very helpful, but be wary with writing groups. Almost every writing group I've been a member of has ended up being a group of friends who happen to critique each other's work. And of course, once you become too friendly with your colleagues, you end up, again, back in the position of not wanting to hurt anybody's feelings. But listen to what writing groups say. Is everyone agreeing on that one thing is wrong? I think if everyone agrees that this particular thing is wrong, then it's probably wrong. Change it. But if everyone is disagreeing about what, so if everyone is pointing a different thing and saying, oh, I'm not quite sure about this, you're probably then down to the point where everyone is just expressing their own personal taste. So probably the book is fine. And then, you know, you can pay an editor to take a look at the book. So that has the advantage, obviously, that they're experienced. They have no personal connection to you. So they're going to be quite, their feedback, their report is going to be quite helpful and, you know, in a more analytical way than somebody who is perhaps a friend or a colleague. So they can that can also be somebody that's helpful to just pay an editor to take a look and give you their opinion. And finally, a question I'm asked quite a lot, actually. So when do you know it's good enough to show to, given what I said at the beginning, that you know an agent or an editor is probably going to work on the book with you and do an edit with you, when do you show it to them? When are you at that point? And I think, again, it's probably fairly obvious, but really it's when it's as good as you can get it. When the book is as good as you by yourself can get it, that's the point at which you take it out there and you invite agents and editors to take a look at it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Readsy Live, the podcast. Our thanks once more to SJ Watson. You can listen to all our past episodes and subscribe to Readsy Live on Spotify, Apple, or your favourite podcast app. And don't forget, head to blog.readsy.com/live and find out more about our upcoming webinars. And don't forget to follow us on all our social media accounts. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you all soon.